This podcast does not provide medical nor legal advice. Please listen to the complete disclosure at the end of the recording.
Hello, and welcome to Everyone Dies, the podcast where we talk about serious illness, dying, death, and bereavement. I'm Marianne Matzo, nurse practitioner, and I use my experience from working as a nurse for 45 years to help answer your questions about what happens at the end of life.
And I'm Charlie Navarette, an actor in New York City, and here to offer an every person viewpoint to our podcast. We are both here because we believe that the more you know, the better prepared you are to make difficult decisions.
So welcome to this week's show. Please relax, get yourself something to drink, some pie.
Pie.
And thank you. Pie. And thank you for spending the next hour with Charlie and me for our next installment in our healthcare disparity series with a focus on the Indigenous American community. Our regular listeners know that we always remind you that when we talk about a specific group, that we're talking in generalities. Every group has multiple individual approaches and practices that will vary across groups and across individual families and communities. The best way to understand an individual's cultural view is to ask them. That said, though, we don't know what questions to ask without some context, and we'll give you some of that context. And like the BBC, we see our show as offering entertainment, enlightenment, and education. We divide our show into three halves. Don't ask me. To address each of these goals. And we're very serious during the second half, which focuses on our educational topic of the week. The other two halves may have more chit-chat, but feel free to fast forward if you need to. In the first half, Charlie tells us about spirit plates and has our recipe of the week. In the second half, we welcome back Dr. Gina Ford, a clinical nurse specialist from the Department of Internal Medicine at the University of New Mexico Healthcare Systems in Albuquerque. And in the third half, Charlie has a reading about a Native American funeral written by Gail Rubin titled Witness to a Native American Funeral. So, Charlie, how have you been doing?
Fine. I can't complain. I still do, but I can't complain. What about you?
Well, I just saw last night Fool's Paradise. Have you seen that?
I'm sorry. What is it called?
Fool's Paradise.
That sounds familiar.
It's one of the last films that Ray Liotta was in. And it's about a guy who has suffered some trauma and can't talk, and he kind of gets pulled into incredible situations, and sort of his story, which was pretty amusing. But I was watching Ray Liotta, and he had so much energy and looked so good.
Yeah,
I thought, you know, it's like another one of those reminders that you can, you know, give a energetic performance, look great, and, you know.
Drop dead.
He died in his sleep, actually, which is not a bad way to
go.
Well,
yeah, very odd, yes. Yeah.
You know, he had heart failure, and, but God, he looked good in that film. And if you haven't seen it, I think you'd like it. It's very, very snarky about different people and it's one of those things where you have to watch because it's so kind of complex or simplistic, depending on how you want to look at it.
I do remember now. You're right. I have not seen it, but that's why I popped in because it's the last film he made. He died. I don't think it was 100% finished, but enough of his part was finished that they were able to move forward. But, you know, got a lot of.
Well, I was reading that he had like three films that he was working on right at the end. And I think this is the first of his last three films that's been released. The other two I don't think have been yet.
Of course, one of his last films that I saw that I really enjoyed was Cocaine Bear.
Oh my God, you're still on Cocaine Bear.
That was funny. So supposedly there's a sequel in the works. So I hope that comes to fruition. But yes.
God. I never saw you so tickled about something. So you got a recipe for us this week, Charles?
Maybe. In the United States, there are 573 federally recognized Native American tribes and 634 First Nations Aboriginal groups in Canada. About 1 in 5 Mexicans identifies as a member of an indigenous group, according to recent figures. As with many cultures, food is an important part of Native American life. Europeans introduced to the North America diet wheat flour, dairy, cane sugar, as well as beef, pork, and chicken. The tribal community diet was based on harvesting wild plants for food and medicine, using complex farming systems, and maintaining seed diversity. They used all parts of the animals and plants with respect, seeing themselves as part of their environment, and therefore, nothing was wasted. One Native American tradition that honors ancestors is to place small portions from each prepared dish on a plate or piece of birch bark to make a spirit plate to feed those who have died. After plating the food, some will offer sema, tobacco, and then set it into a fire. Because dreams are seen as a communication from our ancestors, it is said that if you dream about somebody that's died, you should make a spirit plate for them because they are hungry. Ojibwe, ghost supper, is another way to show ancestral reverence, usually a year after the death, but this ceremony can also occur as part of the funeral or memorial service. Regardless of time of year, sharing dinner together serves as the central focus. At the ghost supper, attention is paid to using different doors to enter and exit rooms. It is said that this is so the spirit does not follow you back in. Some communities will use a jibakwe to recognize those who take on the duties of the individual who has died. A seat is prepared where the person would have sat if they were alive. They invite a person to take on the role in their family as their mother or their grandmother and sit in the prepared seat. They'll give them gifts and let them stand in for that person. One word for ancestor, Yankee Bojen, translates to tying together and helps symbolize a deeply rooted respect for the wisdom, direction, and sacrifices of the generations that came before, that allow the community to thrive. Given the focus on eating foods from the land, our recipe this week is scalloped corn casserole. Psst, a little known factoid for you. Food is called scalloped when it is cooked in milk or cream and baked until bubbly. Ooh, I like bubbly. Champagne, and, well, but I digress. And baked until bubbly, which is where we depart from traditional Native American food and evolve into a high-calorie adaptation. This delectable combination of corn, cheese, cream, and eggs, topped with rich crackers, will have everyone at your next funeral lunch asking you for your recipe. So,
That kind of sounds good.
It does sound good. Do you scallop? I'm not quite sure how that comes out if I ask someone, do you scallop?
As often as I can, Charlie.
So please go to our webpage for this week's recipe for scalloped corn casserole, plus additional resources for this program. Your tax-deductible donations are always welcome so that we can continue to offer you quality programming. Thank you in advance for making your donation at www.everyonedies.org. That's every, the number one, dies.org. Marianne?
Thanks, Charlie. Over 5 million United States citizens self-determined as Indigenous Americans in 2020. Nearly 2 million are members of the 574 federally recognized tribes in the 37 states of the U.S. government. Federally recognized tribes are sovereign nations with governing authority collaborating with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Each tribe has its own allotted land assigned through the Indian Removal Act, although rarely their traditional homeland, with a unique governing structure, unique language, religion, and traditional beliefs. Families live together in multi-generational homes. Some reservations have their schools, grocery stores, and infrastructure to afford that tribal members' access to necessary services within the reservation are met. But many homes lack indoor plumbing, running water, and electricity. Today, we're joined by Dr. Gina Ford, a clinical nurse specialist from the Department of Internal Affairs at the University of New Mexico Healthcare System in Albuquerque. Dr. Ford is Indigenous herself, coming from the Southern Cheyenne and Citizen Potawatomi nations, and practices palliative care in New Mexico, caring for many tribal patients from the various reservations and pueblos. Our chat today is about death in Indigenous American communities. Typical values, including celebrating life, respect for traditional ways, hope for a peaceful death, and access to comfort-focused care while surrounded by family in the hospital or the tribal land. Indigenous Americans believe that the spirit does not die, but transitions. So death is not the end of anything, but a transition. Even in tribes where dying is considered unmentionable for discussion, caring for someone during this transition is expected, and palliative care concepts are consistent with traditional beliefs. Because death is seen as a time of transition, preparing the spirit is essential for the end of life. So please welcome Dr. Ford.
I remember going to a Comanche funeral to support a friend of mine whose mother who died, who was not her actual mother, but anyway. And I was one of the only white people there. And I got kind of a lot of looks, but I stayed right through the end. At the end, they kind of did a slideshow and they sang hymns. Mm-hmm. And as I was listening to the hymns, I said to my friend, I said, what's the word? I mean, they were singing in Comanche. I said, what's the word that sort of sounds like Jesus in all these songs? She says, it's Jesus. Yeah. And she told me that, because there was, a lot of the culture that I didn't know, but, that kind of thrust of Christianity onto mm-hmm. the Indigenous Americans got incorporated into their songs. Mm-hmm. And so you think, well, it's got to be a different word, even though it sounds like Jesus, but it was Jesus.
Mm-hmm. No, there is. And, most of the songs that they sing at, funerals, the hymns, they do, have, and they convert like Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art, all of those traditional older hymns are converted into our tribal languages. So, yeah.
So I was reading about different burial practices in Indigenous Americans, and you said that cremation was not something that's typically happens. And, we know in different other cultures that the body being in contact with the earth, being returned to the earth. But I was also reading about some tribes that will put the bodies like out in trees, that kind of thing. Are you familiar with any of that?
So I think that, that was something, I think a long time ago, that was something that was done a lot of times. They, they would have them, raised up on those awnings that they would do that. But, dying, historically, and it's something that is, traditionally very accepted. It's just kind of seen as a transition. It's not anything that, is ever fought against. And even in tribes where dying is really kind of considered, unmentionable for discussion, but, caring for them is always expected. And so, I don't think that it goes against any traditional beliefs, anything like that. There are varying practices once somebody dies. You know, most of the time it is burial. You know, I think that, you know, as time has progressed, you know, that's kind of the mainstream. Before, there used to be different, more options, I would say. You know, I think before the burial, that there's probably a more variation in the practices and what you do. Like, for instance, when my grandmother passed, you know, my mother and my aunt, they prepared her body. They didn't let the person in the funeral home bathe her or get her dressed. That was something that they did, you know, so they bathed her, they got her dressed, you know, they did, you know, got her makeup ready. That was just something that the women did. My mother, you know, being the, you know, rebel that she was, wanted to be cremated. And so, you know, she was just kind of doing her, you know, that was something she always wanted, you know, and it really kind of rattled a few people in my family, but we knew that's what she wanted. She was very clear forever, that's what I want. And so we honored that. You know, but that was not something that was traditional. And so, you know, but I do think it varies. A long time ago, you know, I had heard about that, you know, that they would raise them up on, you know, those scaffolding. And, you know, for various reasons, you know, that's not done anymore. Mm-hmm. But I think for now, a lot of time, the mainstream is, you know, the most, I guess, accepted way would be burial.
Mm-hmm. Well, I so appreciate your honesty and openness and sharing this, you know, fascinating culture. I find we talk a lot about different cultures on this show, and I always find it so interesting to hear approaches and thoughts. And I think that one of the important takeaways, as you've been saying, and as we always say, is that you ask, you say to people, mm-hmm. what, you know, what would bring you comfort now? What yes. would be helpful to you now? And not assume that because they're indigenous populations, that there's something in particular that they're going to do. It may be, it may not be. But the only way you're ever going to know is to ask, to be present, to be open to whatever experience comes, you know, to show up for the funeral, bring a hot dish, right? And be available. Beyond that, though, Gina, is there any other advice that you'd have for our listeners in terms of supporting Indigenous Americans through serious illness and dying and death in the bereavement phase?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I'll leave you with one little, you know, kind of tidbit story. You know, I think it's important to remember it's always okay to ask. I've never, ever had anybody that I know, my friends, colleagues, personal, professional, ever get offended by asking somebody, how can I be of help to you? What is it that I need to know about you to, you know, if you're working professionally, to be of help to you or personally, how can I be here for you? What can I do to bring, you know, you and your loved one comfort right now? But, you know, in working, I remember I was working with a very, very traditional family, and we were having a very intense family meeting and, you know, conveying how serious the situation was. And after I stepped out of the room, you know, full of elders, you know, and I had a translator in there. The grandson stepped out. He was probably in his 20s. And he said, look, he goes, I may have been, you know, raised on the reservation. And he was like, but I'm going to university. And he was like, I can't say anything in front of them, but I understand what you're saying. And I understand the situation isn't, you know, going well. And I'll do my best to carry on what you said. And so I think, you know, and the person that was shadowing me was just shocked. And she's like, I had no idea, you know, that he wasn't, you know, believing exactly what they believed, because he didn't say anything and he looks just like them. And so I think, again, it's important not to just go off of what people look like. I'll just leave you with that. But thank you again so much for having me. And, you know, I hope that this was helpful.
Well, Gina, thank you so much. And we really appreciate you being with us on our show. Take care.
Our third half reading is from Gail Rubin, titled Witness to a Native American Funeral. Be sure to check out Gail's work about dying and death at www.agoodgoodbye.com. The funeral and burial for Two Moonwalker in a pioneer cemetery located in the open high desert between Albuquerque and Santa Fe incorporated Native American rituals that left me with a profound appreciation for our physical existence and the eternal nature of our spirits. Before describing this funeral, please know that I was invited to attend and write about this event. Before taking pictures, I asked for permission and was told pictures could be taken up to the time the body was lowered into the grave and then after the grave was filled. Two Moonwalker, 61, was born of Apache and South American Native American parents. Two's obituary in the Santa Fe New Mexican listed her many accomplishments. Artist, noted for work in basketry, leather, beads, and feathers. Musician, collaborated on the lyrics to Puff the Magic Dragon and Dust in the Wind. Academic and author, Business Revolution Through Ancestral Wisdom. She co-founded with her partner, Bonnie San Moonwalker, the philosophy of universal beingness within the whole, a spiritual system based on environmental consciousness and peaceful coexistence. Her community, family, and students worldwide honored her as a grandmother of great wisdom and insight. After she died at home near Moriarty on March 28th, her body laid in state for 4 days. She had post-polio syndrome and had developed pneumonia. Dry ice helped preserve Tu's body while Lonnie and others washed and dressed her and performed rituals leading up to the burial on April 2nd. The Higher Cemetery, the site for this burial, was founded over 100 years ago, when New Mexico was still a territory. The town has since disappeared, leaving the graves of pioneers in one part of the cemetery. The Higher Cemetery Association was founded by people living in the area to continue using the deeded cemetery. It is a non-perpetual care burial ground under the wide open sky with natural earth and native plant life. The association allows grave burial for people who live in the area. No liner or vault is required. The grave had been dug with a backhoe the day before. The dug-up earth was piled over 3 feet high next to the grave. No effort had been made to cover the dirt, as happens in so many traditional cemeteries. Planks along and across the grave supported a low plywood platform, which supported the body during the ritual before burial. Several thick ropes were laid across the platform. A hearse driven by two young men in light-colored suits brought Tu's body to the cemetery. Her body was wrapped in a colorful Pendleton blanket, resting on a cradle, a wooden frame designed for transportation and burial. Colorful sashes secured the blanket, and evergreen boughs were arranged around the cradle once it was positioned over the grave. Lonnie made offerings to the four directions, east, south, west, and north, and to Mother Earth and Father Sky. She held up colorful bundles, spoke different words of prayer in each direction, then tucked the bundles around Tu's body. Friends offered attendees a cleansing liquid to rub on their hands and over their heads. Then they brought around containers of cornmeal and invited attendees to sprinkle cornmeal on the body after offering blessings to the four directions, earth and sky. The cornmeal is said to offer food and assure Tu a safe, prosperous journey to the spirit plane. Lonnie then told a wonderful story about the Moonwalker family, upstanding members of the Apache Nation, warriors of the Red Rose and the Rainbow Path. The story involved Tu's father, Grandfather Carl Moonwalker, Mother Mama, and the entire family in a humorous encounter with a missionary woman who had come to their home on a cold winter night to convert them. She was not successful in her mission, and the family had some fun messing with her mind. Life is challenging. It's just that way, said Lonnie. Our task is to have joy in spite of life's challenges. With that story, we release two back to Mother Earth. Chanting of, hey, ah, na, na, hey, ah, na, na, hey, ah, na, hey, ah, oh, started with drumming and a rattle as preparations were made to lower the body into the grave. The drum and rattle rhythm sped up as the body was lifted with the ropes. The plywood platform was slid off over the foot of the grave. Then the body was lowered using the ropes. The chanting continued as Lonnie poured water on the body and attendees threw evergreen boughs and flowers into the grave. Everyone was invited to help place earth on Tu's body. This was not a mere ceremonial placement of a handful of dirt. People took turns shoveling until the grave was entirely filled. I pitched in, shoveling energetically for several minutes. It was dusty business, hard work that drives home the reality of burying the dead. While the burial was occurring, Tu's followers went around and sprinkled cornmeal on attendees, offering the blessing of all life. Packages of Tu's favorite foods, green grapes, a small orange, and dried fruits and nuts were offered to all attendees. Packages of Tu's favorite foods, green grapes, a small orange, and fried fruits and nuts were offered to all attendees. People were invited to take Tu's personal belongings that had been brought in large baskets. Folks were encouraged to take more than one item. Blue light special. We've got to clear it all out, said Lonnie. While the grave was being filled in, a woman donned a lime green jacket and matching hat, starting acting a little strange, dropping onto her knees next to the grave, saying, bye-bye, love. I love you. She came over to me and at one point and said what she was doing was a native tradition that translated as the art of making fun. When the grave was totally filled, the attendees sang Puff the Magic Dragon in Tu's honor. A guest book was passed around for people to sign their names, and the attendees received a program with Tu's picture and a poem written by her father, Grandfather Carl Moonwalker. Prayer of Beingness. May my feet walk upon Mother Earth in humbleness. May my feet walk in Father Son's light with humility. And may I, as one with the all, may I always be with her on my side. May I always be with him on my other side. And may I always be as one with the all. Very cool.
That's really a view into a different, I mean, from an Italian family, it's a very different kind of funeral than what,
yes,
you know, I'm used to.
And with that, please stay tuned for the continuing saga of Everyone Dies. And thank you for listening. This is Charlie Navarette, and a phrase attributed to Oglala Lakota war leader Crazy Horse. Today is a good day to die.
And I'm Marianne Matzo, and we'll see you next week. Remember, every day is a gift.
This podcast does not provide medical advice. All discussion on this podcast, such as treatments, dosages, outcomes, charts, patient profiles, advice, messages, and any other discussion are for informational purposes only and are not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment. Always seek the advice of your primary care practitioner or other qualified health providers with any questions that you may have regarding your health. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard from this podcast. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Everyone Dies does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, practitioners, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned in this podcast. Reliance on any information provided in this podcast by persons appearing on this podcast at the invitation of Everyone Dies or by other members is solely at your own risk.